Welcome to the Beekeeper's Corner Podcast. September 3rd, 2012, episode number 33, The Labor Day Play. Summer is coming to a close here in New Jersey, and we are starting to do our preparations for fall management. And we will focus on that for this episode. It's going to be a packed episode run here today. It's a bunch of different things to bring to you. Looking forward to getting things buttoned up for the end of the year. It's been a good season for us so far here in 2012. And we have a whole bunch of topics to bring to you. Let's run through what we have in store. The Schmidt-Sting Index. Stumbled across an index that rates the pain. It provides a description of the sting to give you a sense of the differences. We'll share the insights of where the honeybee rates on this sting index. A different mousetrap, still working on the answer for the one that I've been hypothesizing about, but I want to talk to you about the Peron hive coming to us straight from Argentina. A sip of HTO, a pinch of salt, a smidge of protein, all in the day's work for a sweat bee. Real honey. Ever wonder if that packet of honey in the package of the fast food store is real or not? We'll tell you how to tell if it's the real deal. The neural network of bees. The human mind has reached a theoretical capacity, but can we look to the bees as humans to get smarter? Wow, that's the topics of this episode. That does not consider the round table, which is overflowing with topics too. So, you know what? Time to kick this episode off. We'll do it as we always do. Let's get to the local hive report. We have four hives on the property for this go-around, and all four hives are in reasonable shape as we enter into September. They are all queen right about now, but they all have a limited number of stores. What I mean by that is they don't have a ton of pollen and honey. If you grab the handle and lift up on them, they are very light in weight, and this is the time they should be packing on those stores for the fall. The asters and the goldenrod are blooming right now, and you can see them bringing in some pollen, but they should also have the fall nectar flow here in New Jersey. It's not been a kind summer from that standpoint. Not a lot of rain here, although I guess I can't really tell. We've been on vacation. Towards the latter part of July, we went to Florida right after we recorded the most previous episode. The following weekend, we took Danny up to school at Rochester. Then the weekend after that, we went to see my sister in Atlantic City. And here we are at the end of September and haven't been home to look in after the bees that much. So it's been said that there's not been a lot of rain here, and I could tell from the evidence. When we walk out to the back of our property, there's a swale over there, that hence the name of Brand Hollow, and it's usually wet, and there is a weed called jewelweed that grows on our property. At this time of year, it's supposed to be about 6 feet tall. The kids love this product because they get to walk through it and make little mazes and they can't see each other. It is non-existent here in the fall. It is dried up, and what is there is probably only about 3 feet high. We also note as we look at our oak trees through the property, all the leaves are curled and they're starting to fall prematurely. And the little creek that typically runs down past the hive and our main creek out front of the property, all dry. The main creek is pretty much a puddle at this point. Now, that's ironic because it's raining as I record this. For the first time, it's seeing a steady rain. We typically have seen a shower or thunderstorm here or there, but no rain for days to speak of. As we record this, there was a hurricane that just came through Louisiana and is traversing the United States. Should get here tomorrow. And we're looking at a couple inches of rain is what they're telling us. And we could use the rain, as is the case for much of the United States. I know that a lot of people are in that premise. But it might be bode well for us because it will fill the plants with liquid. and potentially restore that nectar flow that we should be getting this time of year. Not sure if that's how it works, but really hoping that that's the case. As if you've listened to the podcast before, you know I'm not a big fan of having to do supplemental feeding on our hives. I'd really like them to be able to survive on nature's accord. One of the other things going on is mite checks. It is July and August, and if you're a fan of this podcast, you hear me incessantly preach that this is the time to do your mite checks to ensure that your bees will have a good run-up to the first frost in the Northeast so that they will overwinter. I did mite checks on all four of our hives. Hive 1 and 2 have Apigard on them as we speak, as the thresholds were up later in the summer, and they did require treatment. They're both just about finished with their runs. Hive number 3 is right at the threshold. Did a check of it this weekend, and if it develops any more mite load, we're going to have to do some service on it. Hive 4 was above the threshold, and we're going to have to figure out some sort of treatment for that. My typical go-to for the last 2 years has been Apigard. I had a large package of that, and I am out of it. I would like to try Mite Away Quick Strips, but given timing of treatment, I think I'll probably go with some powdered sugar dustings to knock that load down until I can get my hands on some Max. I do not have any Mite Away Quick Strips in my disposal. So it's been a dry summer here, and a dry fall is probably in store. We're going to end up feeding our bees. We're keeping an eye on the mites. And so far, the hives look, you know, relatively healthy. The one hive had incredible brood patterns, hive number 4. Just wall-to-wall brood patterns. And the other hive, which was extremely cranky when I inspected it on Saturday, has nothing to speak of, and that's probably what they were so mad about. So we definitely have to get some food on there and see if that changes their disposition a little bit. 4 hives on the property, all going strong, look like they're reasonable to overwinter, and we'll just keep tracking them until we get to that first frost and put them to bed. That's it for the local hive report. So far, so good for the 2012 season, and we'll keep our fingers crossed that things progress appropriately for the remainder of the year. Local hive report done. Check. Time to get into our segments for this episode. Let's step into number 1, the Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-D-T, the Schmidt Sting Index. You know, one of the more popular topics of the county fair that we just participated in this past weekend is the topic of being stung. I have to assume that most people have encountered a sting of some sort over the course of their lifetime, but as it is when you're in the public, they always want to know how powerful the sting is and how many times you've been stung. I know the answer to how many times I've been stung because I have been keeping track this year. As I sit here today, the count stands at 20, with 2 of them coming this past weekend from that nasty hive that I was just talking about. The premise of how hard, or better said, how painful a bee sting is a different thing altogether. I am interested in, therefore, a method that I came across about the Sting Pain Index that ranks the relative pain of a sting or bite and provides a description so you can comprehend what it feels like to encounter said sting or bite. The Schmidt Sting Index ranks the sting on an index of 1 to 4. A sweat bee is a number 1 on the index, and the sting is described as a light, ephemeral, almost fruity feel, kind of a weird description. They give an addition to that, which makes more sense. It is like a tiny spark that has singed a single hair on your arm that I can identify with. A bald-faced hornet, yellow jacket, and European hornet are a 2 out of 4 on the index. The paper wasp is the highest hymenetra listed, and it is a 3.0. The higher ones are typically ants and other insects that cause more painful bites. The paper wasp was described as caustic and burning, like spilling a beaker of hydrochloric acid on a paper cut. Doesn't that sound pleasant? So where does a honeybee fall? The scale is listed from 0 to 2 on the index, and the honeybee is unique in that way. I can identify with that because sometimes the bee stings you and it hardly hurts, and other times it burns like crazy. Incidentally, the description given for a honeybee sting is that it is like a match head that flips off and burns on your skin. I would say that this is a very accurate description. I'll provide a link to the Schmitz Pain Index in our show notes. Our show notes can be accessed at our website, www.bkcorner.org. While I'm giving out the address, I'll give out a couple bits of information here. If you want to reach us at the BK Corner, you can send an email to me, kevin@bkcorner.org. Please include your name and tell us how to pronounce it. You could also call our phone line, 609-460-4037. That's the same protocol. Leave us a message as to who you are and what you're, where you're calling from, and tell us how to pronounce your name. This past week, I received an email from a listener who said that they had just finished listening to all of the podcasts that we recorded thus far. I started to take time to go back and listen to some of the past episodes of the podcast after reading that email, and the whole point of doing this podcast in the first place was to record for posterity our beekeeping activities. You know, I really enjoyed listening to past episodes, and I'm actually surprised at how well they stand up. Maybe it's me, but I thought at some point that I would find glaring errors, misnomers, and other problems, but for the most part, they're actually pretty good, and I enjoy relearning some of the things that we covered that I had forgotten, which, incidentally, is the purpose of this podcast. For posterity, I get to go back and relive the things that I've learned along the way. And that has been the most enjoyable part of it. It also helps me not to repeat myself over and over again, although there are some tenets that do, for all intent and purposes, need to be repeated. So one of the things that old history rekindled is my constant thoughts of coming up with a new hive design. I haven't talked about that in a number of episodes, but it is always, always on my mind. I still have aspirations of building a new cartridge-style hive, and subliminally, I find myself on almost every given day looking at examples in the world for design ideas of my new hives. This is a Kevin moment here. I was standing in the kitchen at work, making myself a cup of coffee, opening and closing the drawers, or the overhead cabinets, and looking at how the hinges worked when somebody walked in and they were watching me trying to figure out what the heck I was doing. Yeah, I really do look at this kind of stuff every day with the vision of someday I'm going to build this hive. Anyway... Recently, a post was made in a beekeeping forum that I participate from Oscar Perone, an educator from Argentina who teaches extensive natural beekeeping in that region and maintains hives in the Formosa province of Argentina. Oscar dedicates himself to saving the bees via perm agriculture, which, by translation, relates to living in harmony with the universe and reversing the ecological disaster humans have been creating. Oscar travels through many countries in Latin America, giving courses and conferences and promoting bioremediation. The point of telling you all this is to share that Oscar has come up with a hive design that promotes natural beekeeping. If memory serves me correctly, I believe I shared a video of this on a podcast, but since that time, several videos have been posted that shows the hive design in use. The principle of Oscar's hive design is that they create a large chamber at the bottom for the bees to reside in that is generally not to be disturbed by the beekeeper, while allowing, for all intent and purposes, the honey boxes to be placed over for the beekeeper. The design is most interesting and seems to resemble a bee tree in approach, and to some extent is a bit like a large Ware hive from Europe, from what I know of them. Another touch on their approach is to keep things natural. They don't use treated wood, no paint, no varnish, no chemicals. They use a blowtorch to waterproof the hives by scorching the outside of them. pretty interesting commentary for watching those videos. I'm going to present a link to their website, and it has a handful of videos and all of the insights about the hive design and how it is being used. The one thing that I saw in the videos tweaked my interest and is another little tidbit to store in my memory banks for when I get into really designing my hive. One of Oscar's design principles is that the frame should be 9 millimeters apart. This is a little bit different than the Langstroth hive and has an impact on Varroa management. The 9 millimeter space is slightly smaller than the Langstroth hive, and according to Oscar, it maintains the temperature in the brood chamber a little bit hotter than the Langstroth hive. The implication of this is the Langstroth hive allows that 1 degree difference where the Varroa can survive inside that chamber. The 1 degree up makes it inhospitable for Varroa mite, and the hive design may take care of the Varroa problem in its own right. Now, if you went with this hive after a period of time, not sure if the Varroa would learn to adapt, but it is an interesting prospect to change it because, you know, people have tried small cell and other ways to get rid of Varroa, and maybe the temperature is a key to unlocking the way to get rid of the critters. So the interesting piece for me is that the way it was described is the Langstroth hive allows, because the space is a little bit bigger, the heat to escape that area where the Perrone hive keeps it a little bit tighter. I've always been fascinated by the principle of heat management and airflow inside the hive, and any morsel of interest is just that, interest to me. I encourage you to take some time to watch the videos. I believe you'll find that the hive design is a cross between the Ware hive, the Langstroth hive, and a top bar hive, and it is most fascinating. So again, head over to the show notes, and I'll provide you a link to check it out. Once you're in the world of bees, it becomes evident that bees are everywhere. As beekeepers, however, we have a heightened awareness of bees in our environment, and this summer, both Sharon and I have noticed an overabundance of sweat bees present, which is something we don't typically see very often. This got me to thinking about what exactly is a sweat bee. Are they same as, say, mason bees? Where do they live? How do they operate? And why exactly do they drink the sweat from our bodies? So the term sweat bee is a bit of a generalization. It's the common name for a large family of bees which have an affinity for the salts of human perspiration. Sweat bees are generally smaller in size and can range from a tenth of an inch to almost a half inch in length. That's 4 millimeters to 10 millimeters for our international listeners. They're usually dark colored and often metallic in appearance. Several species are partially green and can have traces of red. Also, a number of them have yellow markings, especially in the males. They operate very stealthily and are very quick and almost always in and out before you even know it. They can indeed suck sweat from you and you may not even be aware of their presence. While they have the ability to sting, I can't say that I've ever heard of anyone saying that they have been stung by a sweat bee. So it seems those bees that we call sweat bees are really a number of different types of bees, and their lifestyles differ greatly. Some of them are solitary bees, where the female builds its nest and occupies it alone, while others, like the common eastern sweat bee, show varying levels of sociality and may live in hives where several egg-laying queens reside with other nestmates. So what is it about human sweat that the bees like? Well, to them, we are one big salt lick. It is also possible that they are after the proteins in our sweat. Human sweat is kind of like the third kidney, if you want to think of it that way. The waste that comes from our bodies includes sodium, chloride, lead, zinc, mercury, magnesium, and many other chemical compounds, including a protein known as dermicidin, which is an antibiotic peptide. This peptide, it is thought, serves as sort of a proactive way for our body to fight off bacteria, which uses our skin as feeding and mating grounds. So it could be very well that they're drinking the water, which is what they're after. They like the salt, and they also are getting a bit of protein. A full balanced meal, if you will. So sweat bees, very interesting. You see them darting in and out, and just something that is commonly around during the summer. And I've also noticed as we've watched our bees forage that the sweat bees are on almost all the plants with the bees too. So take a look. You'll see them all over the place, probably where you live. There's still plenty more to bring you in this episode, so let's go to segment number 4 about identifying real honey. Beekeepers are very proactive of their honey and its image, as they should be. There have been news stories that indicate that cheap or fake honey is present in our food chain. As a beekeeper, it's useful for you to know some simple ways to tell if honey is genuine or not. So how about the characteristics? I don't recall the origin, but someone shared this infographic on how to distinguish natural honey. An infographic is a pictorial display using pictures, images, and text elements in an artistic way to share information, and they have become a very popular tool in the mainstream media for generating interest in topics where they can be used effectively. You see them sometimes in Popular Mechanics, Popular Science. You see them on MSN.com and CNN. They're very pictorial, and they are really a good way to convey a message. So back to the topic at hand. How can one tell the difference between a fake honey and a pure honey? Well, pure honey has a honey aroma. It causes a mild burning sensation in the throat. It does not separate into layers when poured. It has a soft texture and a thin filament-like trickle and contains no foam. Fake honey may not smell like anything at all, does not cause that burning sensation in the throat, is runny and drips, and it spreads immediately along the surface that it is poured out upon. These are just some of the ways that you could tell whether it is real honey in the package or not. The characteristics of honey are not the only way to tell if it is real or adulterated. Unscrupulous providers dilute their honey with cheaper products and even add foreign materials to increase the thickness and improve their profit margins. The infographic has some experiments you can perform to go even further to test your honey. For example, you can hold a lighted match to honey. It should melt. It will not hiss and sizzle. Natural honey will not dissolve in water. If you take honey and put it on paper, it should not spread with a damp patch around it. In addition, if you took a stale piece of bread and dipped it into honey, it should not soften over time. The reason is honey has a limited amount of moisture and the bread should remain firm and the water should not leach out of the honey when you put it on paper. Here's one more test you can do, although there are a few more listed on the infographic. Mix some honey with water and add 2 to 3 drops of vinegar. If the solution becomes foamy, it is adulterated honey. All interesting stuff, don't you think? If you want to refer to the infographic, again, we'll point you to our show notes. There, you'll find a link to see it directly. Segment number 5, the neural network of bees. Found an article in Scientific American in the July 2011 issue that I was perusing about why we as humans probably cannot get much smarter. It comes with evolutionary constraints in the brain about how many neurons we could pass and how big the pathways are and things like that, the size of the brain, and how making adjustments to those, as we have over the centuries, is really running out of prospect, and it's possible that we cannot get any smarter than our current configuration given the limitations of the human anatomy. So what does this have to do with beekeeping? Well, they hypothesize that bees have solved the problem for humans in a sort of a way. What the bees do is they break through their physical limits of their individual brains by working in a social network, and that the entire colony is like one particular brain. The bees, able to communicate to each other, operate like a major brain with sub-little brains operating inside. If we as humans decided to take that approach, it is possible that we can combine to increase our neural capacities by going past the physical and joining together socially to become a greater sum of the good. It's an interesting prospect, don't you think? And they say that the humans have done this in one way. Our think tanks, our network storage, so to speak, beyond our brain, has become the very medium in which you've obtained this information. The internet is said to be our compensation for the way that bees have distributed their information socially. Makes you wonder if Cybertron is going to come to the forefront at some point through the social network of computers and the internet, but let's not get into hypothesis of doomsday prophecy that the human race is going to go the way of the dodo bird. It is interesting to say, though, that the bees got there first. Well, we find ourselves about a half hour into this episode, and we have cranked through the main topics. Now we're going to fall into Roundtable. Roundtable at the BK Corner is an amalgamation of different things about beekeeping that we catch up on. And the first one that I want to talk about is an RFP for the NJBA. RFP stands for Request for Proposal. One of the things that we have on the roadmap for 2012-13 at the state level, which I'm not necessarily involved with, but volunteered to sit in and help with, is to revamp the New Jersey Beekeepers Association website. The public-facing website is something that is a real difficult thing to maintain properly when it is all-encompassing and tries to accomplish all that it should be to meet business objectives of an organization as diverse as the NJBA. When you think about writing requirements to hire a vendor to revamp something, there is so much involved, and the devil is in the details. It's a public-facing website. It's a private members-only website, and it's also an executive board website that has all the parts and, you know, moving parts and features that you need. Some of the complexities of a website, when you do it well and it is all-encompassing, center upon the ability to register for an event, track expenditures, to keep track of documents, to exchange information and ideas, to give educational aspects and program features to different members of the public and the beekeeping membership. So much involved, so much detail to work through, and to hire a vendor for an appropriate price to accomplish the business objectives. If you've ever been through this exercise, it's not necessarily one that is enjoyable because of the amount of work and detail involved. But nonetheless, we're working on this RFP, request for proposal, trying to tighten up what it is you share with a prospective vendor so they get an idea of what it is you want to build and how you want to do it. And, we'll let you know how that goes. But right now, boy, that's just one of those things that's going on that you underestimate how much work is involved in doing something like that. Topic number two, as I mentioned earlier, I think, Danny is off to Rochester Institute of Technology, his new college, switched up there and started class today on Labor Day. During the orientation, one of the persons up there was doing a feature where you can see like a bee, and they have an event coming up in September time frame where you can go up there and participate in this live-sized event where you go in and get the aspect of how a bee sees things, changing the colors and so on. I got kind of a vague description of it, but it sounded very fascinating. And if we could work that into the schedule, we're going to pop up there and see what we can see. very interested in that. As the school itself is very much into science, this is something that they're presenting as part of their curriculum, and it should be a pretty neat thing to check out. Hinted earlier that this is the season for county fairs, and we participated in the Hunterdon County Fair over the past weekend. It was pretty interesting experience, and one that we've been through a couple times, where you sit in the bee cage and talk to people. It's always funny to me that I say to folks, we'll talk about 15 to 20 minutes, but after 20 minutes, they're still all standing there, and you just keep on going. And an hour later, as people start to eventually trickle off and remember that there's a fair going on behind them, they walk away, and you always find yourself in a position where there's enough to talk about to keep it going. I was there the last day of the fair, went over to do something with a friend of mine, and when I came back through, I stopped at the bee booth to pick up some of my equipment that was there, and a woman was standing at the counter saying, "You're the one that was in the booth the other day. You were great." Well, you know, and she did stand there for a long time. So it never ceases to amaze me how fascinated people are to stand there and learn about beekeeping. To that end, this weekend we have our municipal harvest festival going on in the local town near me, and we'll be participating in a booth there and educating folks. We won't have a bee cage, but we will have an observation hive, and we'll be selling some honey and distributing information. Always fun to get in and amongst people, and what I find, this one I volunteered to set up and host, and though a lot of people have seriously done the good majority of the setup work, I know that I have a daunting task ahead of me this weekend to get everything in check, getting the tables there, getting the bees there, getting the brochure stuff set up, making sure that the honey is there, and getting the cash boxes and all that stuff set up. You know, I take for granted the people that do that for our local fairs, and the fact that I'm just doing a one-day event and there's still a significant amount of work to do, but I've been there and done that, so I don't think it's going to be that much of a problem, but it should be fun to see how that goes, and again, on a future episode, we'll let you know how that works out. I have one more topic for the roundtable, but before I do, I'm going to take a right at the fork in the road and go off a little path. I mentioned during the local hive report that our area does not seem to have a wealth of nectar for the fall flow, and while I do see some pollen coming in, things generally have been pretty slow around here concerning forage for the bees. That brings us to an opportunity to present the term for this episode, and that term is dearth. The definition of dearth is a period of time where there is no available forage for bees due to weather conditions, rain, drought, or some other factor, or the time of year it is in your climate where you live. While I can't say that we're in a dearth by the strongest definition, the fact that we normally have a fall nectar flow here, and that we didn't have one last year, and last year when we got to the Hunterdon County Fair, the hurricane blew through, and then following that, we had two tropical storms, and it rained literally through the entire time that we should have had a fall flow. And it looks like we're set up to not have one again this year. So somehow, this is a term of the day, term of the episode, that kind of fits as to what's going on around here. Okay, back to the regularly scheduled program. Last topic for the roundtable before we close the episode down. I want to talk about the YouTube channel that we maintain for Northwest New Jersey Beekeepers Association. I could kind of say it's really a combination BK Corner NW NJBA channel. We've posted a dozen videos over there recently, varying topics about keeping your equipment clean, European hornets, water sources that we talk about sometimes here, an interview with the Honey Queen from the American Beekeepers Federation, a shot of an Apigard treatment, and one of my favorite videos, a quick interview with Stan Wozzetowski, who I would consider probably the closest thing to a mentor that we have. And there's a couple other things on there, how to do a sugar shake, how to do an alcohol wash mite check. That one's pretty informative if you haven't done your checks yet. Go look and see how to do it and make sure you're doing your Varroa checks. The one that I think most people will get their kick out of is the bee warning video, and they don't mess around is what the title says. If you watch a video, you will see me get thunked on the nose by a bee, and then again, and I won't give it away, go look, you'll see the surprise. You could view these videos at youtube.com/NWNJBA. There's about a dozen of them up there right now, but there's 100-something videos posted in our archive, so something for everyone, as they say. Go check it out. NWNJBA is the channel you can search for, or you can go to youtube.com, NWNJBA. Well, it has been a good run, and it's time to bring it to a close. Thanks, everybody, for stopping by. We will probably get to more frequent runs of some episodes coming up here through the fall as we close the season down here in New Jersey. Vacations are done. Kids are going back to school. Soccer is starting. Coaching a team this fall and still involved with that over there. And plenty of activities for the Beekeepers Association, but this is a love, a passion, and a lot of fun to go through and set these episodes up. So we'll be back. Don't you worry. Talk to you soon. This is Kevin England signing off. Thanks, everyone, for listening to the Beekeepers Corner podcast.